Welcome to Forging a Life podcast with Coach Christine Clark. Forging a Life is a SunGlow Transformation production aired on Transformation Talk Radio and all your favorite podcast platforms. If you own a business, have a side hustle, desire to make the leap into self-employment, or just love human interest stories, Forging a Life podcast is for you. Christine Clark is an internationally certified transformational life coach. She is the coach for your entrepreneurial life, and these are her people. Jump into the fire with those forging success on their own terms with courage, tenacity, and resilience. These are men and women you could easily meet on the street in your own community. Gain wisdom, insight, knowledge, and inspiration each episode as these business owners get transparent with Coach Christine Clark, sharing their passions, challenges, and origin stories. This is Forging a Life.
Hello, this is Coach Christine Clark, and this is Forging a Life. My guest today is Ron Jansen, the owner of Jansen Machine, which has been in business since 1993. Ron is a new friend that I met while I was visiting Wisconsin. Tell me, Ron, where is your shop? Because I don't even know exactly where in Illinois it is.
Yeah, actually, it's just north of Rockford, Illinois. Just south of the border from Wisconsin, not too far from where you came to visit and I first met you. So,
yeah. And I'm just delighted to have you with me today, Ron. We had the opportunity to just hang out and get to know each other a little bit. It was lovely. And I'm just want to share what you created in your business with the people that are going to hear this podcast. So let's give everybody a little background. Tell us just a little bit about who you are as a person. Anything you want to share is perfectly wonderful.
Okay. That sounds great, Christine. No, it was great to meet you over the summer, and just want to say it's an honor to be on your show. So yeah, going back to where everything started, I guess I'll go a little bit farther back. I grew up on a family farm. My father was very mechanically inclined, so I was about 8 years old when he sold the farm and decided to retire, but he was so bored with that, so he decided to start a farm repair shop. He did that for several years. And when I was in high school, I started in a Votech school. It was a really nice program, and started machine shop program in Sterling, Illinois. And I had 800 plus hours of hands-on machining time there.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. It was very fun, but I was very intrigued by machining, and that's what kind of caught my interest. And, my dad was also excited about that too, because in his business after farming, he worked on a lot of the farmers' equipment around here. And, he just always wished that he could know how to machine parts. So that was right. Kind of interesting for him to see that I went into that field before he passed. So anyhow, I started, working in the machine shops, when I was in high school. I worked in two machine shops in Freeport, Illinois, and not too far from Rockford. And after I graduated high school, I saw an ad in the paper for a job at Barbara Coleman Company, an old large company in Rockford that was hiring for a prototype machinist. So I applied, was fortunate enough to get the job there. So that's when I really started to go in that direction.
Tell me about what a prototype machinist is. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, I was fortunate enough to work in that position. Prototyping is a lot of one-offs, the first very new part that's ever thought of. So I was working with engineers at Barbara Coleman, where it was in the small motor division, small electric motors, and they would come up with an idea for a new part, something that has never been made before. So I would work in that area, and we would machine all of the new ideas or new parts that they had an idea for. So it was really interesting. And that's where I really found my interest in machining other than just working in a machine shop doing the same thing every day, day in and day out. So
when I think of machining, I think of more production work while you're making a part that's going to go in something else, and you make, you know, 50, 100 or however many thousands of those.
Exactly.
So
that's what I did when I was in high school. I did that kind of work.
Right. So you got into the prototyping with them. And then how long did you stay there?
I stayed at Barbara Coleman for 8 years. In that time frame, I met Jeff, my business partner now. He was actually my boss towards the end of my time there. And I learned a lot from him too, as far as machining and ideas on how to do things differently. Especially if you're just making one piece, you have to make it right the first time. A lot of that kind of work was intriguing to me, and I just really a lot of interest in it because it's not the same thing every day in and day out. So yeah, actually, when Barbara Coleman was sold, you could kind of see the writing on the wall. They were up for sale. I was at a point where I didn't know if I was going to want to try to find another job or try to do this on my own. So while I was at Barbara Coleman, there was a gentleman, his name was George Johnson at Continental Machine, and we would outsource work to him while I was working there at Barbara Coleman. And he offered me time to work in his shop so I wouldn't have to spend the money to invest in equipment. And I was able to rent machine time from him just to see if I could try this out as a business. So that was really nice that I could do that. His agreement with me was that he would just want 20% of my profits, which was okay. Let's just see if this works out. George was such a great guy. He started out the same way. He worked at National Lock in Rockford, Illinois. And he went through a similar situation like me where that company was sold, and he had to do that same thing. And he worked machines in another man's shop for a while before he started out on his own. So
that was a model that he had done himself and wanted to offer it to you. When did the idea of running your own shop occur?
I think it came from my parents. I mean, just growing up on the farm, and then my dad still continued to work, and he had his own business after he sold the farm. Just seeing that when I was growing up. But also, I think just the aspects of working in a large company, the politics, all that. It was something that I was really leaning towards getting away from. So that's where I think it was always in the back of my mind. But when time came and Barbara Coleman was sold, moved the operations out of town, it's like, okay, I either got one chance to do this and I'm going to go for it or not. And fortunately, it worked out. The engineers that I did work for at Barbara Coleman had gone off to other companies, and they remembered the work that I did. So I almost immediately had an instant customer base from those engineers that I worked with, which was perfect timing to jump into it.
Right. That was what I was going to ask you, is that where'd you find those first customers to get yourself off the ground? They already knew you because of the work you'd been doing.
Absolutely.
That is cool. So really, you had people that recognized your talent work and were happy to come and contract directly with you to do prototypes. And you had this gentleman that says, hey, you can borrow shop time, give me 20%. And so you don't have to put in, you know, the money. Tell me about some of the machines that are in your shop currently. I mean, what kind of stuff do you have?
Yeah, it's mostly CNC equipment or manual machinery. Almost anything can be made with a milling machine or a lathe or a grinder. Those are the three basic machines that I have. When I worked at Continental Machine, I worked there for about a year and a half, and I had to work around his schedule. So I sometimes have to come in at nights when he wasn't there working. But once I knew I could do this and it took off and I had enough customers, then that's when I I took my 401k that I had invested with Barbara Coleman for those 8 years I was there and bought a lathe, a mill, and a grinder.
Okay.
And it was interesting because the exact space that I worked in at Barbara Coleman in Rockford was vacant, and they were turning that into an incubator building for small business. So I rented that same space where I worked at Barbara Coleman.
Wow.
for the past 8 years.
Right.
So I moved three machines into that area. And okay. it almost felt like home again without all the politics around me.
Right, right. You got to be your own person and do the same thing.
And it worked out good that that building was a nice place to have my business at because they still had heat treating facilities, plating facilities. I couldn't even get my raw material from them. And I really didn't have to go anywhere to get it. It was all there. So it was really nice.
And those were other businesses that were in that same building, incubator building. They were just doing different things.
Yeah. In fact, Barbara Coleman, their main bread and butter was textiles. So they built textile machinery, which they built for years and years and years. Over time, a lot of those machines were sent overseas to Indonesia or China. But years and years ago, a lot of the textiles down south because the cotton fields were there, you know, the logistics and when everything was back in the day made in America, a lot of the textile machinery was sent down south because that's where they would make all the clothing and all the fabrics.
Right.
So that was still there. That part of the business was still there and still in operation. So they still had their steel facilities there. They had their heat treating and plating there too. So it was so convenient. I just was able to plug right into that area and right to work. So it was nice.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. So you got started, you said, actually kind of started in 1993 before you left Barbara Coleman. And then how long did you do the rent space before you stepped in and bought your own machines to make your business a separate thing?
Yeah. So I was at the old Barbara Coleman building since, 94, 95 is when I moved in there. During that time, Jeff, my business partner now, he went and worked at other shops. And then he just gave me a call out of the blue and just said, "Hey, how's it going? Want to see your shop? I heard your business." And he came on board in 1999.
Okay.
And he has a good background in milling, 3D machining. So it was really a compliment with him and us working together. So it was about a year with him there. And then we moved out of the old Barbara Coleman building and moved into Love's Park. And that's just like a suburb of Rockford, just north of there.
Okay.
And that's where we've been there ever since.
Yeah. And your website's got a picture of the building. You know, tell me about building, you know, employee base or a team.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, I worked by myself about 3 years. And then doing prototype work, that kind of leads into production work, right? So you make one, two, all of a sudden they like it. It works. It takes off. They want me to make more. And they actually came into a situation where these parts that I prototyped, they were asking for hundreds and thousands of them. So I actually hired a semi-retired lady from Barbara Coleman that was really good at production work. So she was looking for work part-time, but not too much because it would affect her Social Security. So she started out part-time and helping me with the production side of work. And she was great. She did a lot of that kind of work for me so I could stay focused on the prototyping and tooling work that I do. And
so
that was
a gal that was retired and she's actually at the machines making stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Because she told me she was bored sitting at home. So she wanted something to do. And so of course I never knew her when I worked at Barbara Coleman, but I was introduced to her from an engineer that I was making these parts for. And he knew her and said, "Hey, you're working too many late nights running my parts. You need to get a hold of Lois and see if she can work for you." Cause she's looking for something to do. And She actually worked for me for almost 12 years.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. That's fun. That's fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Building on that, I guess, to answer your question, as it worked out, we hired Jeff's son. He started out from high school, and he's turned into a really excellent machinist too, doing prototyping and all kinds of work to this day. Hired a lot of other people along the way, come and gone, but we found that it was best to just bring people in, train them with the way we want it, the way we would like to have parts made, versus in some cases, other situations were like a subcontractor where it just didn't work out. So we just rather hire them and show them what we do and train them in that aspect instead of subbing out the work. So it's been good. We were up to 11 employees. Right now we're at 7.
So what do you look for in somebody, especially if you want to bring them in and train them in your style and how you like things to be operated? So when you're hiring, how do you figure that out? What do you look for?
You know, it's funny because a lot of the thing is we don't really advertise. It's more word of mouth. It's almost like that with our business too. Every employee that we have right now is usually another employee saying, hey, so-and-so is looking for work and they're pretty good, or they work at this shop. They're tired of working there. They'd love to work here. So yeah, I really never put an ad in the paper for anyone to have an interview other than just the fact of word of mouth. And yeah, usually someone will recommend them and say, hey, they're pretty good. So we might want to take a look and see what they can do. And depending on what we have at the time, it's always worked out for whatever situation we've had. So yeah, I don't really advertise too much. It was funny because when I first started my business, I thought, I'm going to put an ad in the Yellow Pages, right? And that was the biggest waste of money. A lot of the business is word of mouth and it's reputation. So,
right. That's cool. And you've been doing that for over 26 years, 27 years now. What is it that you provide as an employer that people want to come work for you?
Well, I think it's more of a, I don't want to say a laid back environment, but it's not, you know, like structured like larger company is. It's more hands-on. It's work at your own pace. But if you have a job that you're working on from start to finish, you know, the avenues, and we show them the avenues to take to make the parts, and they have more freedom there. It's just more freedom working in our shop because we're a small shop. And, we can offer that because we don't have the structure of a larger company. I guess I don't mean to say anything bad about a large company structure. I just know that I've worked in one, and that's where I just thought I'm going to make it a little bit different for any of my employees, you know.
Because you talked about wanting to get away from the politics. Mm-hmm. And so tell me how, can you describe what politics is and then what that isn't in your shop?
Right. Well, I saw it mostly at Barbara Coleman, where rumors or people talking about this or that, and then jealousy or whatever it is, it's just the larger amount of employees are around you working with, or just try to undermine you. You know, maybe the part that I made didn't work, but it wasn't any fault of my own workmanship. But yet I could be, you know, held accountable for it because this was not right, or just anything like could be in that aspect. But I wasn't used to the structure, the you know, this time and this time. you know, this is my day. I go to work, I do this, and at this time of day I do this, and then it just, I was never that kind of a person, never had that mentality. So yeah. It was tough working there, but I will say the best thing that I've ever learned working at Barbara Coleman was how big companies operate. And I think that's what was a key for me to deal with those large companies. So, you know, even when I was sending work out to Continental Machine and knowing how the purchase order system works, I know how the approval system works. You have to quote the jobs. You know, I've pretty much started out off the ground running in that aspect. So I was able to deal with those larger companies. Three of the engineers that I worked with at Barbara Coleman went on to other companies, and it took a little while, but eventually within, you know, a couple of years, I was dealing with all three of those engineers again, and they worked at larger companies. So I had to go through the purchasing department and dealing with the buyers and quoting, and knowing that, I think it really helped me working there so I can continue that into that type of work. Because like I said, we do a lot of work for big companies, but the thing is, I can still take walk-ins. Like someone can walk in and a broken part on their lawnmower, you know, and can't find a part for their old car or something. And we can do that too, which I enjoy that.
But that's cool.
The bread and butter of our business is the larger companies and doing the work with engineers and prototypes that sometimes leads into production work.
Right. So what's been like the coolest project or the weirdest project that you've done as far as creating something or making something?
Yeah. It was recently it was a couple years ago, we were working on a project. It was kind of top secret, who knows, but you know, I can say at least a few things about it. Not supposed to say, but it was for a submarine drone, and it was a project for the Navy, and it was a complicated assembly where we had to almost assemble an octagon shaped magnet into an octagon shaped steel part, and no one's ever done that before, so to line it up was be tough. So we did a heat shrink operation, so where we cool the magnet and keep it really cold and then heat up the housing and warm that up. And the only way we could figure out how to do it is to put it in our CNC machine, because it can act like a robot. It can actually mm-hmm. move. And we were able to do that with success the first time.
Wow.
Very expensive parts.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And it was a job I couldn't even really quote, because very expensive parts, obviously. And I almost didn't want to do it, but this was my engineering manager that worked at Barbara Coleman when I quit and went off to do my own thing. Bill Yaden, he started his own engineering firm and he started his own company. And I've been doing work for him ever since as well.
Okay.
And he came in with this idea for this magnet, but the shape of it was tough to do.
So I'm guessing that cooling of the one part and the heating of the other part was
project.
To be able to put them together, because the tolerances were just like...
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And you figure, and then you had to have something mechanical hold on to it to put it, because you couldn't physically handle it with your hands.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was too hot, and then it was too cold. You couldn't touch it. So we used our CNC machine to do the assembly work. But those are the kinds of things that I think was, even when I was younger, it's what's always intrigued me, is to do something from scratch or something different that's never been done before. So that was probably the highlight so far.
That's pulling a rabbit out of the hat. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And as you're telling me this, because I am not a mechanical person, I'm thinking, how would you even know to think of changing the temperature of the two parts to make it work? I mean, that's really creative.
Yeah. Yeah, that was actually brainstormed between Bill and us. And we were talking about it. So we we brainstormed it together. But
cool.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of when you were talking about Howard with his things in his shop and with his forging press and trying. Sometimes you have to make something that's not out there to make it work.
Right, right. Yeah, I have to make a part to make a part.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. So what's been some of the stuff that you've really, really enjoyed the most personally for you in this business?
I think just seeing the progression of things. It's been a lot of ups and downs, obviously. Went through several recessions and, you know, even this last round with the pandemic, it's just really impacted our business a lot. But it all comes down to, I think, the hard work and the reputation is the key, I think, as far as for any business, really. It's been that. I think it's fulfilling to know that you actually have people that remember who you are. Even if they work at this company or that company, they'll go somewhere else and then they'll still give you a call because they're there for you and they want you to be working on their parts, you know, because they respect the quality and the that type of work. So that's really how we've built our customer base, is from a lot of engineers that go to work at other companies. So yeah, I guess looking back on everything like that, just seeing the progression of everything is interesting and it's fun.
Yeah, that's cool. That is really cool. In business as an entrepreneur, that's just business. You're gonna have these times where everything's clicking, the projects are coming in, things are being completed. People like what you're doing. It's just going great. And then there's these times where something goes wrong. Somebody's not satisfied or there was miscommunication about what they wanted. And then, like you said, then the economy goes up and down. In our business, Howard was making pocket knives in, I think it was 1993. And he had like 8 people that bought everything he made, and it was like pocket jewelry, you know, and these guys had lots of money and they were buying, he finished one and they bought it, and these really beautiful little pocket knives. And then in the fall, there was this hiccup in the stock market, and all at once, every single one of them stopped buying. Nobody was buying it anymore. And it was like, okay, now what? Cause we've been doing this thing that's been so steady and so guaranteed, you know, for several years. And then all of a sudden we have to, there's got to be a plan B, or we got to punt or do something, because those buyers ain't buying anymore.
Yep. I know the feeling well. It's just the downs are for sure. In fact, that's more recently what we've went through with aerospace, because that being down about 50% across the board. Yeah, we were on track for our best year, record year going on 2019, going into 2020. And then once everything shut down, travel shut down, two of our biggest customers are aerospace. So they just pulled in. They didn't send any work out. And obviously, we feed off of the larger companies outsourcing work to us. So
right. It
just stopped. Just almost immediately. So it was in July of last year, July of 2020, the first time that I ever remember us being on 40 hours for over a year. We just started back on 45 hours last week. But yeah, we've been through some recessions before, maybe slow for 6 months. But with everything being shut down last year, it was just so devastating to not just restaurants, obviously, but restaurants so far have been bouncing back, but we've been slow for about at least July, I'd say 14, 15 months.
Okay.
We were always working 50-50 out, 55 hours a week. And your people were happy with that
because they were getting overtime and everybody's engaged. They like what they're doing. The culture of the companies. And so to pull back to 40 is like you're cutting out. That's a significant chunk of your paycheck. When we had a conversation before, when we were cutting back to 40 hours to take the sting off a little bit, you were doing 4 10-hour days. So everybody got 3-day weekends.
Yes, correct.
Yep. I thought that was a great solution.
Oh yeah. Everyone loved it, especially over the summer, having 3-day weekends. We did that. I mean, it was great. And going back to work on Fridays, it came with a little bit of friction because everyone's used to working 4-day weeks, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everyone's still grateful though that busy because definitely that's what we need to do.
Yeah. So when you were at your peak, I mean, what kind of hours was everybody putting in?
50 to 55.
Okay.
Yeah, so we would work Monday through Friday and half a day on Saturdays. And that was pretty much the norm for most of the history of Janssen Machine.
With the employees, tell me what the cool part of having employees is.
I think mostly to see them grow. I mean, learn and see where they started and now where they're at. You know, everyone there is a craftsman, and they just have a unique way of doing things in their own way. And I think that's what I find the most enjoyable is to see their progress and where they started and where they are now, where they become. So that to me is what it is.
Cool. What's the tough part of having employees?
There's a lot of things with the healthcare. We went through that with Obamacare and, you know, we pay for pretty much most of our employees' healthcare and we still do to this day. But the Obamacare, when that started, all the insurance companies raised their prices and it tripled. Yeah, it tripled for us. So we were...
Jiminy Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I tell Jeff, it's one of those things you want to keep offering this or do you want to, you know, have that as a, have everyone pay their own insurance? I mean, I just think that's a big benefit to have for someone to be covered with healthcare and we still continue to do that.
Yeah. So you play 100% of the healthcare for the people?
Yeah, mostly. Each employee pays $10 a week. And for dependents, it's $40 a week. So
yeah,
we have to have them pay. For some reason or some law, our agent says that they have to start doing this during Obamacare, but they have to pay for some portion of it at some amount. So we just pick $10. Okay. But yeah, we pay for most of it.
Yeah.
But that was... big difference with that increase and with the rates going up. I mean, I look at how much machinery we could have bought over the years if we didn't have that extra expense. So right. that makes it tough to compete. It really does. But
yeah, because when you price things, I'm running this in my head because you bid jobs or bid, you know, give somebody an idea about what it costs for you to prototype, create something for them. And you have to pay for the employee's time. You have to pay for the parts. You have to pay for the overhead. You have to pay for the health insurance. And you know, you should pay yourself somewhere in there.
Right.
Tell me about the skill of being able to bid a job.
Yeah, every bid is different. Some are pretty straightforward where you're just quoting a part off a drawing and you know the material costs and this and that. And what it's going to take to make it. There's other projects that might be more in depth, might be a project that would take a lot more time to figure that out. Believe it or not, I also change my quote based on who I'm dealing with. And I don't mean to be selective by saying that, but there's some customers that don't pay very well. And I kind of have to take that into consideration as well. Customers that pay us quickly are going to get a better price, you know, because I can't afford to be a bank, you know. So
absolutely. Yeah. That's cool. So I coach entrepreneurs. I work with a lot of people, Ron, and getting people to be able to do what is solid in business for themselves and not capitulate or, I mean, just what you said, you know, your customer, you know, who's going to pay. And for the people that are, you want you to be at the bank, time value of money says they need to pay more because you're not going to get it now. Exactly. And to be able to have that mindset that this is business, this is not anything to be ashamed of, this make me a bad person, this is what needs to be done because I have to do right by my business, by my employees.
Exactly. And, so true.
And sometimes that's really difficult for some people to grasp because they want to be liked, because they want to be whatever, or you know, they'll underbid a job because they want it. And it's like, then they have to do it and then they run out of money. To be able to separate those things that, I don't know. Well, you tell me, what's the perspective? Because I think that there's a piece that you have to put the priority on your business, yourself, and your employees if you have them.
Yeah. Going back to what you just said, I have a story that I can tell briefly.
Lovely.
It was a customer that was just being very demanding and just always asking for their parts right away. Our worst paying customer. They didn't pay their bills good. They had inspectors that would inspect our work and just trying to create work for themselves and trying to say the parts are bad and they're not. And we were always babysitting our customer. So Jeff and I decided to, we sat down and had a few beers and talked about it and said, you know what, let's just stop doing the work. What are they going to do? Right. So we sent them a letter and said, effective immediately, we're no longer doing work. We have this much inventory of your parts on the shelf and you decide if you want to pay for them or not. So right away we received a phone call from the buyer saying, you can't do that to us. And I said, yes, we can. And it was tough. It was really tough. I mean, you're talking, you know, dealing with a lot of parts that could just be not sold, you know.
Right. But decide to run away and then you're stuck with the parts that you've made and no paycheck for them. Right.
Right. But after all the dust settled and a few months went by, I thought this is the best thing we've ever done because it freed up our time with that customer. We have more time to do work for customers that are receptive and love our work and pay us well. Mm-hmm. And we were able to take on more business because we weren't fighting fires with this customer. And I guess what I want to say, if it comes down to that, I mean, if you only have one customer that doesn't pay well, then I guess you're stuck with them. But if you have customers that are treating you well and you have some that aren't, business is a two-way street. And
absolutely.
That was something I learned. It was actually the best feeling I've ever had. It was the first time I fired a customer, but it was the right move.
Right. Yeah. And that, you know, that takes cojones to be able to look that in the face and say, no, this is not, you know, what is this costing me? Well, it's costing me stress. It's costing me time. And to be able to say, this isn't worth it for us to do that at any price. And it's scary. Yeah. That's a courageous move to be able to cut that person out. And then to see what happened was all that time, that space, and then it got filled by people that love you and people that pay you and you're able to take on more jobs. And that's the beautiful part that is past the tough decision is what can show up and come into that space when you are willing to make those tough calls. Yeah.
Yeah. Even the employees were happier because that all trickles down, because these hot jobs that would come in and somebody was working on a project and have to stop what they're doing to do this.
Right.
And just to get rid of that outside noise with this customer was huge. And we've done that probably two or three times since then.
Right. And the first time's the hardest.
Right.
Yeah. And then you learn. It's like, oh, hey, this is actually okay. Mm-hmm. I can do this. Not only can I survive, but I can thrive. Thank you for sharing that, Ron. What else has been a really cool learning experience doing what you're doing?
I just enjoy seeing our customers also grow. When I mentioned that my engineering manager, he started dealing with me after Barbara Coleman, I dealt with him back and forth for ever since he's been in business. He passed away about 5 years ago. And his main engineer, Brad Prestraglio, he took over the business. So I kind of helped him, give him some pointers off and on when he was struggling with finances and this and that. But just be reciprocal with that too. Even to this day, even though Bill's not around, his guy took it over and he's sending us work and we have a good rapport together. And I just enjoy that. It's rewarding to be able to share that. My experiences with him and kind of help out wherever I can in that aspect as well.
Nice. Kind of passing it along from what somebody offered you when you got started.
Right.
Yeah. I like the community that you have, because what I'm hearing is that there's a lot of integrity and there's a lot of, good ethics, people doing good work, people trusting others to do good work, and camaraderie, people helping each other out. It's just refreshing. It's really nice to hear about, because as you've shared about the different, you know, people that remembered you and knew that you did quality work, and so they brought, you know, their projects to you. Someone gave you space to get started. Mm-hmm. You're helping somebody else. That's solid. That's a really great, culture within the industry in your area. Is what mm-hmm. I'm hearing.
Yeah. It's been rewarding in that aspect. That's what I enjoy the most, other than the day-to-day things that I do, but working on new projects, which I enjoy, but being able to help out if I can in that regard is rewarding as well, for sure.
Yeah. What does the future look like from right now?
It's looking like aerospace is going to start to picking up again. Companies that we are dealing with or have been dealing with have been hiring people back. So they seem to be, quote activity has been increasing. So that's good. I hope it continues. We need it to. As far as everything else, we'll look and see what we need to get for equipment. There's some machinery that we probably should replace at some point, but we just want to get back to some steady business here again soon, which haven't seen that for a while. Looking forward to that. So Jeff and I, we started our own company of our own products about 5-8 years ago, I would say. It's some of our own ideas of tools that we use in our own shop, and came up with some recycling ideas too. So we have another company on the side that we are trying to get that going, and it's been selling some, but nothing like it, like we would see, but it's there. And it's kind of like the thing where, you know, you do all these parts for other people because they have their own product. So we kind of thought it'd be kind of nice to have our own product.
Right. So
instead of working for everyone else that has their own products, we came up with a few products of our own and started a website and have some things going there. So see what
kinds of things
that.
Are, what kinds of products are you making for that side business?
We started out with tooling that we use, that we make ourselves, certain types of vise jaws that we use for clamping and the machines, collets, collet stop wrenches, those kinds of things that we use on the lathes. We started out with those kinds of things and started to grow on that. Recycling, we have some, we have a wire stripper. We're working on another one that strips insulation off of wire. So trying to get those off the ground. The one wire stripper that we do have on our website is I think we've been selling that for about 2 or 3 years, but it's slowly starting to ramp up and slowly see sales pick up a little bit there.
Who's the intended customers for some of those things?
With our industrial products, it's more people like ourselves that have machine shops, like equipment that's more heavy duty, that's more durable, like rather than you can buy out of the catalog. So that's what we've been working on there. And we have those products out there, the ones that last longer. So we've kind of made our own that are stronger and that kind of thing. So machine shops would be like customers for that. Wire strippers, I'm not sure, maybe people that want to strip wire to get the copper out of the wire for recycling purposes, because you can get more money for the copper when it's stripped with the insulation off of it than with it being on there. So we have a product that does that. So we did that probably about 5 or 6 years ago and just made about three production runs of them so far. And it sells. It's not steady where we could say, oh, we're going to do this full time. But what's nice about it is when we're slow, which we have been, we can use those products and kind of build up inventory and have our employees working at least when we're not getting work from other customers.
Right. So yeah.
It's been nice to have that too.
Right. You know, multiple, you know, just adding on to your income streams, doing different things. So very cool.
Absolutely. Very
cool. Mm-hmm. Expanding. Awesome. Wow. This has been great, Ron. I appreciate your time. I'm just fascinated by everything that you do. This is fun.
Yeah. You know, it's a pleasure to be talking to you. And I checked out everything with your station and it looks like it was very interesting. So I feel honored to be on your show.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Glad to have you. Anything you want to say or add or share as we wrap up?
I guess just for anyone that's, you know, starting out in business, just go with your gut, what feels right. And, you know, put in the time to do it. And I think your reputation is key. You know, try to do whatever it is, if it's a product or a service, just try to do a good job of it and just try to make sure that your customers will remember you. And that'll probably bring you more business in the future.
Yeah. Do quality work, do caliber, and absolutely, people will come back. Yeah. The reputation part is earned. And don't be afraid of doing the work to do that because it pays dividends.
Right. And that's where the word of mouth comes in, because somebody tells someone else, you know, so.
Yeah. Right.
That's how it's worked for me. And I think that's the key for any business, no matter what it is, if it's a machine shop or anything, is if you do good work, the word of mouth will take care of itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good advice. Excellent advice. Yeah. Thank you, Ron. It has been a pleasure. Tell people how they can find you.
Yeah. So our website is jansenmachineinc.com. So it's all one word, jansenmachineinc.com. Kind of shows pictures of what we do, our equipment.
So the website's a solid place to go to see see what you're about and get all the contact information. How can people contact you if they want to, Ron?
There's a thing on our website that says to contact us, and then they could use that. Or they can just call our number. It's 815-877-9901 is our direct phone number. Email, direct email, other than through the website, is jansenmachine@comcast.net.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you very much. This has been a pleasure.
Well, thanks, Christine. It has been great. And think you're doing a great job with everything that you do. I think that's awesome.
Well, I appreciate that. I received that, Ron. Thank you. Thank you very much. This is Coach Christine Clark. This has been another episode of Forging a Life podcast. My guest today was Ron Jansen of Jansen Machine. You can find him on the web at www.jansenmachineinc.com. This was such a fun interview talking with Ron. There were so many parts that were wonderful. And as I was listening to him and hearing him talk about getting a referral from a friend for Lois, a retiree who was looking for part-time work, and how she came and worked with him and then stayed with the company for 12 years, and that was his first employee, how Ron has never had to place ads for hiring, that he gets referrals and people suggest when someone else is a little disgruntled, go work for Ron, and that he has engineer friends that he worked with at Barbara Coleman. And then they remembered him as they worked and moved into bigger companies. They brought the prototype work to Ron's shop because they knew he did a good job and would get quality parts. I hear the success in Ron's story that they've been working 50 and 50 hours continuously since the start of the company, and that through 2020 for 15 months, they had to cut back to 40 hours, which if you're used to getting an overtime check, that was a lot of money. But he offered the guys to work a 4-day work week and have a 3-day weekend to take the sting off of that. And then when Ron was talking about providing health insurance for his employees, and with Obamacare, when the insurance tripled in price, and he had to go back and say, do we keep doing this, or do we have the employees pay for their own? And for him to say, you know, I think this is really valuable to have, and I want to continue to provide it. The integrity of that choice, because as he said, when you look at those premiums he's been paying for the health coverage for the men, look at all the machinery I could have purchased with that same money. And what I get out of all of this is that Jansen Machine is a company that is an icon for all companies on how to work with integrity, how to take care of your people, how to build a culture of appreciation that grows loyalty. Ron appreciates the people that work for him. When he talked about what he loved best is watching each of them improve and up-level their skills, that everybody in that shop is a craftsman. There was pride in his voice. And that's what it takes to build a solid company, to see the people that are working for you as people, to champion their growth and they continue to expand their abilities, to understand that each person works a little bit differently according to their own priorities, and that it's okay because the work gets done and the quality and the expertise is there. I admire what Ron has created. He is a shining example of what industrial business can be like. Thank you, Ron, for your time, for sitting down with me and having the conversation. This is Coach Christine Clark. This was another episode of Forging a Life podcast. My guest today was Ron Jansen of Jansen Machine. You can find him just outside of Rockford, Illinois. The website is jansenmachineinc.com.